Hi, folks. I'm Jamie Staley, Director of Christian Education here at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. Welcome to Crossroads in the Living Room. This series, we are talking about Mothers of the Messiah, our annual Credo Theological Foundations of Our Faith, where our pastors talk about some of the important parts of our faith. I've been really excited to gather with three of our pastors to talk about Mothers of the Messiah, looking at the book of Matthew and the genealogy found there of Jesus. We're looking at the four women listed there. So far, we've talked about Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and today I'm really excited to have Reverend Chris Palmer with us to talk about Bathsheba. Welcome, Chris. Glad to have you with me.
Jamie, this is so fun. I'm so excited to talk about someone we probably don't talk about enough.
Right, right. So what I've been doing, which I thought would be fun to do with you this morning, is each of us is going to have 30 seconds to briefly share the story of Bathsheba.
Okay.
Does that sound all right?
Okay.
All right. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I think you should go first.
Okay. All right. So we're going to go 30 seconds. You count? You let me
yep.
know when I'm done, all right?
Ready? In 3, 2, 1, go for it.
So the story of Bathsheba we find first in 2 Samuel chapter 11. And there she is bathing, and King David sees her bathing and thinks she's very beautiful and says, bring this woman to me. She is brought to him, and they are together, and she finds out that she's pregnant. And unfortunately for David, she is the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And he is like, oh boy. So he's like, well, what do I do now? And so he sends Uriah to the front lines. Uriah gets killed. He's able to marry Bathsheba and bring her to his palace. She has a child. After this first child named Solomon. And he becomes king, and that is how she ends up in the genealogy of Jesus. Was that about right?
That was right. And that was actually about a minute. I gave you an extra 30 seconds, but it's okay.
All right, well, thank you.
Can I have 30 seconds?
Yeah, you can. Go
okay,
for it.
Are you going to time me?
I am going to time you.
Okay, tell me when to start.
Go.
All right, so to repeat some of what you said, we first meet Bathsheba, whose name literally means daughter of the oath, in 2 Samuel 11. This story kind of comes in 2 Samuel when David is kind of ascended to be king. He's conquered a lot of people. You kind of get that vibe because he's sitting on top of his kingdom looking down, and he's lounging one day. His soldiers are going out to battle, and he, for some reason, is not with his soldiers, which is weird. But he looks down and he sees this beautiful woman. And like you said, he says, oh my gosh, I just must have her. And so tells his guards, sends a messenger to go get her. She comes back. They have intimate relations. One of the things we're told is that when she's bathing, she's actually bathing. It's a ritual purity bath. And so part of the reason we probably know that is because that means she's not pregnant. And of course, then David goes and he learns, Bathsheba sends word to him that after their relations, she is pregnant. So David realizes that this is a threat to his kingdom, originally brings Uriah back and tries to get Uriah to sleep with her to cover his own tracks, so that Uriah would not be able to tell who the father was. But Uriah, being a good, loyal guard of David, a great soldier, refuses. There was Levitical law that said you should not have sexual relations when your king was in battle. And so he's a good, loyal Jew, does not entertain David's request. And then ultimately, David sends him to the front lines and
kills him. I'm going to tell you, you went like a minute 20 there. But that's all right. That's all right. I feel like I couldn't cut you off. You were at a really important part of the story, you know? And there's a whole lot more there to share. So folks at home, make sure that you are also looking at this story so you can catch all of these details that we aren't going to be able to catch in 30 minutes or 1 minute and 22 seconds.
Yes.
It is hard. It is hard.
It's so tough.
And there was a lot to include there, including like the what her name means, which is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. We get to have a whole conversation about that. And there's so many different pieces to this. Although Bathsheba is first mentioned in 2 Samuel, that's not the only place that she's mentioned. So I hope we can maybe touch on some of the other places in scripture where we find her too.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, my favorite story of Bathsheba, I believe, is in Kings, a conversation with her son Solomon. And I think that part of her story is just so interesting.
Yes, yes, yes.
So we will definitely get there. We will definitely get there.
Good. But awesome.
Let's go ahead and start with the part that we both mentioned in our 30 seconds.
Yes.
Which was her relationship with David and this sin of David's. You know, can you give us a little bit more about we hear later in the story, which neither of us touched on, from Nathan and David, and can you just tell us a little bit more about that part of Bathsheba's story? In a lot of places, we see her as kind of almost complicit, a bad guy in this story. But where do we see that kind of playing out?
Yeah, well, maybe can I set some context
Absolutely.
First? I think sometimes that's helpful. So and I talked about this a little bit in my minute and 20-second summary, is 2 Samuel is such an interesting story. I mean, it's not 1 and 2 Samuel. We only have one scroll. It's just Samuel. The book of Samuel is so fascinating because it's all about this broken character named David. And one of the things, this story takes place, David has officially founded the city of Jerusalem, which of course will go on to become the capital, right? David has brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. He's danced the Ark of the Covenant on its way into Jerusalem. He's sacrificed. He's given all of this food out to everybody who joined him. He's seen as the king, right? Abundance is just in David's kingdom. The author wants us to know that David is in his bag. He is on his A game, and he has officially conquered all of his enemies. But we have this weird, the story of Bathsheba starts in this way, where it starts the scene. It says, in the springtime where kings go off to battle. Obviously, you wouldn't fight in wintertime if you were an ancient Near Eastern people. Springtime, everyone was just trying to get by, right? We didn't have refrigeration, food was scarce, so no one was going off to battle in the wintertime. So kings would kind of pause for winter, and then everybody who they had beef with, they would go and fight them again in the spring. And so, but there's this weird thing that happens where the author, the first thing that they say in this scene where we meet Bathsheba is that David is not with the king. He's the king, but he's not with his soldiers anymore. So this guy who was on his A game has now, he's just lounging. He's almost kind of gotten too comfortable with his power, right? David, in some ways, you might see him as a kind of a new Adam figure, right? He's this kind of the steward of the land. And then when and this is really true, a lot of homes in Israel have flat roofs. And of course, if it's spring, that means that usually in the evening, it would be the coolest part of the home, right? Because there would be a breeze. And so often it was not uncommon for people to sleep on the roofs of their home or to maybe bathe either, right? These were very common practices. And so David gets up, he's kind of stretching, he's a little lazy, he walks over and he just sees this woman. And I think it's so interesting because if you were a student, of the Hebrew Bible, I think the first thing you would have thought about in this scene with David is that just like Adam and Eve went and took the forbidden fruit, that there's a way in which Bathsheba, right, the thing that was the sin in Genesis was that it said that the fruit was so beautiful to the eye. The thing that the author of Samuel says about Bathsheba is that she was so beautiful to the eye, right? Just like it says in Genesis that the first humans went out and took the fruit, that it says that David went and took her, right? So there's a lot of parallels here. And one of the things that I think is challenging is that we know that in the story, Bathsheba is set up as much more of a righteous character than David is. There would be a way to hear that and think, oh my gosh, we're just reducing this woman to like this kind of thing to be taken, right? And I think in part, there are problematic pieces of this text that do allow for those readings. And I think maybe, I hope we can talk a little bit later about how we can maybe repair some of those problematic threads. But what happens is, of course, David, this ascendant king, this is really his fall story. Just like the first human beings, right, tripped up in the Garden of Eden, that David has everything that God could ever give him. He has ascended, he's blessed, and just like those first human beings, he falls into error, right? And so he looks down, and it's really interesting because the text is not very particular about what Bathsheba was doing. We tend to fill in those details a little bit later, but the text is not very specific. If you look at a lot of art of Bathsheba, you know, she's nude, she's like stretching out in front of the kingdom. We kind of have this idea, or at least these painters had this idea, that she was just kind of flaunting herself. But the text doesn't actually say that, right? I think the text really wants us to think that David is the one who has initiated and taken advantage of this entire situation. And of course, what happens, we all know, as she's bathing, a kind of purity rite, when women were on their menstrual cycles, right, that they would have to purify themselves afterwards. And so we know, of course, the author includes this, two things. One, she's a faithful Jew, right? She's doing the thing that she should be doing according to the law. But two, is that we know that she's not pregnant, right? And so David goes, has relations with her. And then ultimately, as we pointed out in our summary, she gets pregnant, sends messengers to David. David realizes this is a problem. And so he goes and he ultimately has Uriah killed. And then after the fact, of course, Nathan, just like God in the garden, right, when the human beings fall, right, God goes out and finds them and chastises them, right, and tells them that no longer will they be given all these gifts, but now they'll have to survive off the toil of their own brows. And just like that, we have this prophet of God in the chapter afterwards who really confronts David about his sin and says, "Thou art the man," right? He paints this beautiful, this like very vivid picture of someone who steals the livestock of another person. And David's like, "Oh, that person should be put to death. They're terrible." And Nathan says, "That's you, buddy." And so it's interesting because Bathsheba is really seen, there's this interesting tension to her in this picture where she is both the person who is kind of set up as this very virtuous woman who is doing the things she's supposed to be doing. And she's also, at least in this scene, she's really taken advantage of and maybe not given the agency in this picture that we would hope to see. But in some ways, 2 Samuel 11 only just starts her story and it finishes later.
Absolutely. So before we move on too much from this story, yeah. I want to give poor Uriah just a little bit more airtime. In the book of Matthew, when he is listing this genealogy of Jesus, Bathsheba is not named. She is listed as the wife of Uriah.
She's the only one who doesn't have her name mentioned, right?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
What do you think? Why do you think she's listed as the wife of Uriah? Why was that important? And what might that say about her place in the story?
Well, so I only have an educated guess. Absolutely. I don't know for certain. Two things. One is that one of the things you notice about all of these women in Matthew's genealogy, which is a very radical thing. It's a very radical thing for women to be included in this genealogy, right? In other genealogies of Scripture, we don't have women mentioned, though we know that they were present. We're like, where did they go? But Matthew chooses to include them. And one of the things that they all share in common is that they usually are connected to someone who is not of the people Israel, right? Ruth is a Moabite, for example. Tamar, tradition says, is a Canaanite. Right. And of course, one of the reasons I wonder if Matthew includes Uriah the Hittite is because I wonder if Matthew wants us to know that about Bathsheba, too, is I wonder if Matthew really wants to kind of hammer down that point that Bathsheba, just like Uriah, would have had a kind of a status that was not privileging to her religiously in the people of Israel. And of course, this is going to be important later on. Matthew will say that the gospel is for all people, Jews and non-Jews, right? But I wonder if that's why he wants to make sure that word Hittite gets in there.
Oh, interesting. I like that. I also wondered if it might be just a little small reminder of this sin of David's too, you know, just in case you forgot, this is why Bathsheba is even a part of this story, was that she was originally the wife of Uriah. How interesting.
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting about Bathsheba is she has this kind of hybrid identity, because, of course, we know that she's married to this man who's a convert. And, you know, but also the scripture tells us that Bathsheba is the daughter of a man named Eliam. And Eliam was the son of one of David's kind of closest friends named Ahithophel. We learned about him a little bit later in 2 Samuel. And Ahithophel was kind of part of David's chosen guard. He would have been part of like the innermost circle of the kingdom. And so Bathsheba has this kind of dual identity where she's married to this man who's a convert who doesn't share this kind of culture by blood and yet has kind of been welcomed into it. And yet she's also part of this very close-knit circle of David's closest allies. But it also makes us realize just how creepy David was, because Ahithophel, who would have been about, this means that David was probably the age of Bathsheba's grandfather, which is a bit unnerving.
Yeah, for sure. So you've hinted at, you know, this story is probably the most well-known. I would assume that many of our folks at home have heard this story in one way or another, particularly the part with Nathan and kind of that whole aspect. But I know Bathsheba's story continues. There are several other parts in the scriptures that she has mentioned. So let's just take a little look at some of those. Where else is she? What parts have been kind of overlooked that you have found important in your research on this?
Yeah. So part of it is what's in scripture, and part of it is kind of how the later rabbis interpreted Bathsheba, which I think is also very interesting. So I think it's very sad that I think if you would ask somebody who's Bathsheba, that they would probably say, oh, she's the one who David saw from the roof, right? So we kind of identify that as her story, but we don't tell. There's this other amazing narrative in which Bathsheba kind of teams up with the prophet Nathan in 1 Kings. So this is, David is very close to death at this point. And we know that Bathsheba, like we just said, was a lot younger. But David was very close to death. And David had said that Solomon, the son of Bathsheba, was going to be the king, was going to build God's house, the temple, right? And one of the things that happens is in the book of Samuel and later on in Kings is that people are always trying to get in on the throne. Some folks have nefarious intentions, right? And one of the things that I think these books really drive home is that power is so corruptive. And so we have this other son of David, who is actually brothers with Absalom, who we know rebels against David as well. And so we know he's bad news in the beginning, right? But this other character named Adonijah, right? And he comes and he takes his shot at the throne. And he actually goes out and takes one of the main military leaders named Joab, who does show up in 2 Samuel 11 too. At that point, he's on David's side, but now he's a turncoat, and now he's with Adonijah. But he also takes some of the priests and things like this, and Adonijah just basically decides he's going to be king. And the way that he does this is he says, well, maybe if I have all the right people around me, I can just consolidate so much power that they can't force me out. And so he's sacrificing animals in the tent, right? He's sacrificing animals to God with the priests. He's you know, cozying up with the strongest military leaders in the kingdom. And Bathsheba and Nathan, right, the rightful people who are close to David, they come to David in his old age, and he's barely functioning at this point. It's almost like if you've seen Lord of the Rings, that you see the first scene with Theoden, right? Where Theoden is kind of just this old man who's really just at the disposal of this evil guy named Wormtongue, Grima Wormtongue. And we get a very similar picture of how David's functioning. He's just kind of impotent, right? But Bathsheba goes to David and says, do you not see what's happening here? Your line will be ruined, right? And she outlines this whole picture for him, almost like Nathan does when he scolds David about Bathsheba. And David ultimately, at the end, wakes up almost just like, you know, Gandalf calls Theoden out of that sleep, right? And Bathsheba and Nathan play a very similar role. And they just kind of call David to life again in some ways, that he's going to have one last stand against the people that stand against him. And all of a sudden, almost miraculously, he gains back this vitality. And he goes back and he says, bring me Solomon, right? The rightful heir of the kingdom. And he says, I'm going to put him on my donkey. I'm going to bring out the oil from the tent of meeting, and I want my priests to anoint him with it. And I'm going to march him down the streets so that no one can ever have a second guess as to who is my successor to the throne, right? And so in this hilarious event, right, Bathsheba goes and brings Solomon, and they're parading him throughout the streets of Jerusalem, right? They've anointed him with oil. He's the king. People are thrilled, right? And Adonijah and all of the kind of mischievous people kind of hear this. And so they all go out and they're like, oh, shoot, this is a real hiccup, right? And ultimately they end up fleeing. Solomon is crowned king and actually spares Adonijah's life, even though he really tried to oust him as king. But really, I think that's one of the reasons why Bathsheba is included in the genealogy. She was taken advantage of, but she also saved the kingdom. And without her agency, without her doing the things, teaming up with Nathan, confronting David, bringing this treachery to light, that we don't know if Solomon would have ever been king, right? We don't know if the rest of the genealogy would have actually come to unfold. And it's really thanks to Bathsheba and Nathan that these things happen at all. And I think that we don't often talk about that side of the story, but I wish we would, because I think it just paints her in such a kind of amazing light. She's just this person who so cares about the kingdom. It's a beautiful thing.
I love that. What the story I was mentioning earlier happens just a few chapters later when Solomon is ruling. Mm-hmm. And I love this aspect because I feel like, you're right, she was taken advantage of for so much. You know, the men in her life were making all these decisions for her. And yet at this last time that we see her in scripture, she is coming before her son, Solomon. He bows to her and invites her to come sit at his right hand.
Yeah.
And so that arc of just the where she started and where she ended up is just so cool to look at, I think.
Even if you think about like that there's a height difference, right? That she starts off as the one who's lower than David. He's above her. He's looking down on her. But now in that scene, right, there's kind of this, it's Bathsheba who's ascended to the top, right? Which is kind of beautiful. What can I mention? This isn't in scripture. There is this, so the rabbis talk, they have these very lively stories about Bathsheba. And I love it because kind of dovetailing off what you were saying is in Proverbs, which is in tradition written by Solomon, right? It's a book of wisdom. Solomon was wise, right? But in Proverbs 31, it talks about there's this infamous verse, maybe. A lot of my wife is from Texas, and they always talk about being a Proverbs 31 woman. But this kind of adds a funny rub to it, is that actually the first part of that passage is about abstaining from drunkenness. And it's something like, O son of my womb, you know, why would you engage in this debaucherous behavior? No son of mine kind of thing. And right, Proverbs 30, I don't know, this mother chastising her son. And so the rabbis, when they read this and they hear that this is about a mother, they interpret Proverbs 31 about Bathsheba because she's the mother of Solomon. And so they make up this amazing story. Who knows if it's right, but I think it's fabulous, is that the night before Solomon goes to open up the temple of the Lord, right? And he is, about to do the most important thing of his kingly career, is he goes out and he has a few too many drinks with his friends. And so the morning after, the rabbis say that these are actually Bathsheba's words. No son of mine will be this kind of drunkard type thing. And they tell the story about how Bathsheba, when he wakes up, presumably feeling awful because of his drink, that she ties him to a pole And she flags him for his disobedience, for saying, this is the most important thing you're ever going to do. You know, almost like she's spanking him or something like that. And so I just think it's really funny. We talk about Proverbs 31 and being this Proverbs 31 woman, but it just kind of, the rabbis thought about this Proverbs 31 woman as this like no-nonsense mom who really didn't have time for her son's debauchery, you might say. Which I think adds a funny rub to it. So
that's great. Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. We're getting close to the end of time, but I want to ask, you know, this question is a bit twofold, but I want to know kind of when you first started this journey. I know you've probably heard the story of Bathsheba a million times, and but was there anything new that you learned while researching for this? And then second, to kind of dovetail that, what do you see as important? I've found that just the acknowledgement that Bathsheba was taken advantage of, and just kind of what that does to when we read our scripture and we see the stories of these women and we can hold them up, it kind of is a acknowledgement that there are things wrong in the world, and that even today we can acknowledge these types of similar stories. So where did you first, you know, what did you glean? And then also, what can people take from this kind of in this modern context?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think where I started, I think I had probably like a lot of people, if you would just read certain parts of our scripture, if you would just read the book of Samuel, it's not a chapter that's about it doesn't really focus too much on Bathsheba's own inner life, right? We don't get a lot. And I think if there's one thing I would say to people, and I think I discovered this myself, is that if the text, that often the solution is to keep reading. right? Like, I think if we stop at 2 Samuel 11, we kind of end with some assumptions. And I think it's even evident, right, back to these paintings that I'm talking about, that it was so interesting to me just to see the kind of the posterity of this character, and how, like, if you read the whole story, you're like, that's not who she is. We don't get pictures, right, of Bathsheba sitting next to Solomon, right? We get pictures of Bathsheba nude and kind of whatever. And I just kind of think that people need to keep reading, because I think that there's a way in which that sometimes our own biases and our own kind of privileging of a certain part of the narrative just comes because we haven't actually read to the end. So that's what I would say to people, is like, if just turn the page, go, keep going, even when it seems like you're not content with the answers you're being given, is that it usually gets better. Yeah. I think if there's one other thing I would say about the inclusion piece, is that ultimately, and this goes back to the genealogy in general, is that I think the gospel writers, right, it's so interesting because Matthew decides to start this gospel with this whole long list of names, right? In Mark, it's like one sentence and then he's off fighting demons, right? And then Jesus is just doing his thing. And so you're like, why the heck does this guy want to give us all these names? But of course, the first thing that happens in Matthew's gospel after this long list of names is the character of Mary, right? And Mary is a person who, in some ways, that her own husband is like, what do you mean you're pregnant with the Son of God, right? That there's this kind of weird, kind of untoward part of the story, and the gospel writer wants to say, like, but look, like, there are parts of this throughout scripture, that these women who have these kind of miraculous experiences or these kind of strange experiences, that they get to play a role, and ultimately that they prefigure Mary herself, right? Who will have this this amazing, she'll be the mother of God. And so in some ways, in some ways Bathsheba's just like her grandma. She's the one whose shoulders she stands on.
Yeah, awesome. I love that you included Mary. That's been one of the those side feedbacks that I've received about our series. We call it the Mothers of the Messiah,
yeah.
And yet we have not talked about Mary. So
yeah.
Who knows? Stay tuned maybe next year for Mary, right?
I love it. I love it. I love it. Yeah.
So thanks for sitting down with me and talking about Bathsheba. It's been really nice.
This was so much fun. Thanks, Jamie. It's a great series.
And folks at home, thank you so much for joining us these past 4 weeks to talk about the Mothers of the Messiah. And as Reverend Chris said, we encourage you to turn the page, keep reading.